Sport Podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the Punt podcast. It's good to have you all with us for an action-packed footballing weekend. The chief football writer at the Sunday People, Steve Bates, will join us later on to talk about that Lukaku song, and we'll also discuss the rise of soccer stateside. And for Derek's benefit, I've got the word rise written in inverted commas. Pete Farris, Gav Puchlowski and Al Ross will give you their best bets in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2 respectively. And Alex Dunn, on the back of back-to-back winning European naps, will give his pick on the continent. But first, with your guide to the Premier League this weekend, the godfather of betting, Derek McGovern, is on the line. Hello, Derek.
Good morning, Dave. Nice to be on the podcast again.
And making his debut on the podcast because Andy XL can't be with us, a Sunderland fan who's going to enjoy the rarefied air of Premier League discussion, William Hill's in-play football trader, Michael Lumley. Michael, good afternoon.
Hello, yes, great to be here. Thank you.
And Andy's not set the bar particularly high with his naps so far this season, so you'll be able to jump over that with ease, hopefully.
I'm hoping to at least do better than he's doing.
Let's start then. Huddersfield versus Spurs first up this Premier League weekend. Huddersfield 7-1 to win the game. The draw 7-2 with Spurs 2-5. Enhanced odds, Elias Kachunga to score and Huddersfield to win was 16-1, now 25-1. Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0 was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. Derek, you'll be napping Huddersfield again this week, won't you?
That would be the third week on the run, won't it, if I do? And they've let me down both times. But they've let me down only narrowly. It was a moral victory last week because they had an offside, a perfectly good goal ruled out for offside. And I actually went to the bookies and asked them if they'd pay me out my winnings and my moral winnings. But they said they don't have any morals, bookies, so they wouldn't pay it out for me. I'm looking at these odds here, Tottenham 2-5. And the acclaim Tottenham are getting this season, I'm sorry, it's gone beyond realism. They've failed to beat Burnley this season. They've failed to beat Swansea. Are they good bets away from home at 2-5 to beat a team who have lost only once all season and who seem incredibly well organised, by the way, Huddersfield? Spurs have dropped 7 points in 6 games. The only thing dropping more points is the economy. I'm not having them at these kind of prices. 2-5 is too short. Tottenham they've still got to do it in my eyes. They haven't won anything. You know, they keep getting talked up as the next big thing, but they keep failing away. They don't do it when it's needed. And I'm not backing a team away from home at 2-5 when they fall under that heading. No way. Huddersfield have impressed me this season. I'll tell you what, the manager, David Wagner, he's going to be in the running for manager. If they carry on the way they are, Huddersfield, right now, he's going to be in the running for manager of the year because they look like a team that's been in the Premier League, mid-table Premier League side for like the last 8 or 9 seasons. And this is their first season there. I think he's doing a fantastic job. Do I want to back him at 7-1 to beat Spurs? Probably not, because right now, Huddersfield, I think he seems happy to pick up the point here and there. I'm not sure they're going all out to win right now, Huddersfield. But what I want to do is oppose Spurs. So I'm going to go for Huddersfield on the handicap. I think that's the way to play here, because I think Spurs are there to be opposed at these kind of prices. So Huddersfield plus 2 goals is 8-13. Bit on the short side for me, but plus a goal, 15-8. I'm all over that.
Derek alluded to Huddersfield's priorities this season, and that's being watertight defensively. They've kept 4 clean sheets in their opening 6 Premier League games so far. The only previous newly promoted side to do that were Blackburn Rovers back in 92-93, and they went on to keep 5-7, so that could be a good omen for Huddersfield. But they are going up against one of the Premier League's most elite in-form strikers. Harry Kane has scored 25 Premier League goals in 2017 so far. And he makes his way to the John Smith Stadium on the back of a midweek Champions League hat-trick. against Apoel, and Harry Kane to score first in this game is as short as 2-1 here with William Hill. Michael, how do you view this?
Well, I'm not as particularly harsh on Spurs as Derek is, but I too think 2-5 for a Spurs team who aren't perfect is very short, and it wouldn't be that long ago you wouldn't touch Tottenham at odds on away from home, so 2-5 is definitely short. Huddersfield unbeaten at home, but are yet to face anyone I can see of real note. This is their first big test, and we don't know how Wagner and his team are going to set up, I don't think, because we don't know whether he'll be doing the old press, the German tactics that he used in Dortmund when he was with Klopp. So for me, I certainly want to oppose Tottenham, but it's a bit of a gamble. So I've went drawn or bet Huddersfield at 5-1. I think it gives you a bit of the insurance on the draw, get your money back. You know, Tottenham have done 3 wins from 3 away from home, so it's not can do it. They're not, you know, but for me, Huddersfield drawn or bet at 5-1 is how I would play it.
Okay, Huddersfield DNB at 5-1. Here's a quiz question for you chaps, and I'll let the listeners ponder on this one as well. What has Harry Kane done at the John Smith Stadium, which he's never done at any other Premier League stadium, or any other stadium, in fact, in his career? And do you chaps know off the top of your head, Derek?
No, not a clue.
I'll give the answer at the end of the podcast.
I hate it when you do that.
Chelsea versus Manchester City next. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Chelsea 9-5. The draw 23-10. Man City 6-4. Loads of enhanced odds offers on the website and on the app. And, of course, this is hashtag your odds. So if you want to tweet your bet to @WilliamHill using the hashtag your odds, the traders will price it up. Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win was 18-5. That's been enhanced to 9-2. And if you think Gabriel Jesus is going to score and City are going to win, that was 13-5. That's now 3-1. This is obviously the blockbuster game this weekend. City are top, but only 3 points separate these two sides. Interestingly, Chelsea won both meetings last season with both teams scoring in those two games as well. And City are slight favourites here, Michael. Is that because of the way they've been cutting into teams, or is it a preventative measure because you expect punters to come for City?
See, I think City are favs because of their expected goals and their shots on target, and those kind of things often go into the pricing of their teams. So Man City score 4 or 5 goals a game. Shots on target, normally double figures. Expected goals are huge, much higher than Chelsea, who are more likely to grind a team apart, except for last week, obviously, against Stoke. So Man City's price, I think, is heavily weighted by their very impressive forward line. All those goals, all those shots on targets, their expected goals, which is their kind of, you know, clear chances, as it were. But for me, Chelsea at 9-5, the champions at home, I raised an eyebrow when I saw those odds earlier in the week. I couldn't quite work that out myself. So that was certainly how I would take it as a punter. I even thought under 2.5 was odds against. Man City's defence, 2 goals conceded in the league, 3 goals in all competitions this season. I can't see it being that big a scoring game if Chelsea get their act together. So I would go unders at odds against. And Chelsea to win is how I'd look at it.
I must admit, Derek, I thought similarly to Michael when coming to this game. I couldn't understand why City were clear favourites in the match.
That makes 3 of us.
which is concerning.
Yes, it is. You know, Chelsea are 9-5. I think they were 9-5 at Tottenham earlier in the season when everybody was writing them off. And I thought, well, this is the champions. It's not even a home match for Tottenham. And I napped Chelsea. I think it was my last winning nap, or my only winning nap of the last 5 years, I think it seems. And they're closer with my nap again. Because, you know, you saw what they did in midweek against Atletico Madrid. That was a hard game. You know, that should have been a hard game. They were absolutely magnificent. And it was a fantastic game too. You had David Luiz playing. You had Felipe Luiz playing. Well, on Saturday, Chelsea's attack come up against John Stones and Nicolas Otamendi. Elmer and Louise. I'm sorry, this is a back four that still doesn't impress me. Okay, they've sorted out the fullback positions and they have to, but they haven't sorted out that central defence. And I've got a feeling Morata and Hazard, what a player. I think they'll have a field day. I really do. Some people call this the oil firm derby, which is a clever name for it. But I've got a better name, El Plastico. I love that title. I think Chelsea are absolutely good things here. People are saying that Madrid on Wednesday were disappointing. Antoine Griezmann had not only borrowed Fernando Torres's hair, but also his shooting boots. He was absolutely awful. But Chelsea went to a ground where few people score, never mind win, and could have had a bagful. They were outstanding. And OK, City have been banging in goals, but the five they scored against Liverpool was largely against 10 men. And they'd been outclassed for about half an hour before that. And they've met token opposition since then. I'm not getting worried up about City yet, not with that back four. Chelsea looked the real deal. What did I say early in the season, Dave, by the way, about Chelsea? They've done exactly what I said they would do at the start of the season. Improved massively once Eden Hazard was back and Diego Costa was gone. And that's what's happened.
Eden Hazard, you've mentioned him a couple of times in that piece, Derek. He's had a hand in five goals in his last five Premier League appearances against City as well, scoring three in that spell. He's going to start in this game. He's fresh as well, Derek. I think he'll have a major impact. He's 9-5 to score any time, 6-1 to score first. And another goal scorer, if you're looking at things from the flip side, Sergio Aguero is even money to score any time in this game. He's actually scored in 8 successive starts away from home in the Premier League now. That stat coming from Opta, that's one short of the Premier League record of 9 in a row away from home. And that was set by Robin van Persie at the end of 2010 into the beginning of 2011. So those are two goal scorers to have a look at in the game.
Hi, Alex Dunn here, looking ahead to the rest of the European action this weekend. 2 winning naps in a row now. Can we make it 3 out of 3? I hope so. And there's something at a pretty tasty price that I do quite like on Saturday. It's a 4 o'clock kickoff in France, and it's PSG at home to Bordeaux. I'm not, however, jumping on the PSG bandwagon right about now. They are very good. Of course, they come off the back of the supremely confident win against Bayern Munich. But against Bordeaux on Saturday, they are 7-1 on. Now 8-1 on, in fact. As I'm recording this, they've got shorter. The draw 8-1, Bordeaux 16-1. Quite frankly, too much of a discrepancy in price. We're going to take Bordeaux plus 2 goals at 8-5. This is a Bordeaux side who are just behind PSG in the table. And Bordeaux themselves are unbeaten at this stage. 8-5, Bordeaux plus 2 goals. You've got Bordeaux on your side there to win, to draw, or to lose by a goal. Not bad at all. 8-5, Bordeaux plus 2, the nap on the European front this week.
Now let's switch our attention to Sunday, and Arsenal versus Brighton at midday is first up. Arsenal 2-9, the draw 5-1, Brighton 12-1. Alexandre Lacazette to score, and Arsenal to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0 was 100-30, that's now 4-1. And Pascal Gross to score and Brighton to win was 25-1. That's been enhanced to 33-1. Something that's often levelled, Derek, against Arsenal is that they are flat-track bullies. And the stat that maybe supports that is that they're actually unbeaten in their last 31 Premier League matches against newly promoted sides. They've won 26 of those, drawing just 5. 83 points from a possible 93. And that run goes way back to March 2012 when they lost to QPR. That's astonishing, really, Derek. I know sometimes you look at the prices and you think, wow, they're a big price going to Arsenal, but these are the games that Arsenal mop up.
Yeah, well, that does surprise me, actually. I mean, because I was trying to work out why Arsenal are short of 2-9, and that's why you've just explained perfectly. Everything I was going to say about this game, I've got reservations now because... I wish you hadn't mentioned all that. But yeah, I suppose there is. The difference this time around is this is only the second time in all that time, by the way, that Arsenal have had to contend with the Thursday-Sunday schedule,
which
so many other fans have complained about. They drew 0-0 at Chelsea a fortnight ago after beating Cologne in Europa League, but there was no travelling involved then. Both matches were in London. This time they've travelled to Bate Borisov. It's a hard task for them, that. You know, having to travel in midweek to wherever Bate Borisov live. And it's a travelling that's hardest, especially if you went by Virgin Trains, as I can testify. What I'm trying to say is I don't fancy Arsenal at 2-9. If I back a 2-9 poke, I've said many times, I basically want to go, you know, I would back a 2-9 poke in racing if it was over the last fence, 200 yards to go, and everything else behind a tyre. And even then, I'd think twice. In football, I don't think I've ever backed anything that short. And with good reason. I mean, so often they come a cropper. And Brighton, you know, I tell you what, I watched them last week in that Newcastle game. I thought that was a game Newcastle should mop up easily. But Brighton were absolutely excellent. I really thought they were. and they'll give Arsenal problems. There's only one alternative for me here, and that's to oppose Arsenal on the handicap. I mean, they might win, but I don't think they're going to murder Brighton, because Arsenal are not that kind of team anymore. It's basically, they ain't that good a team anymore. And I think I'm one step ahead of the bookies in saying that, because they're being priced up like they are. Mm. Brighton plus two goals is 23-20. I like that.
Michael, your thoughts?
I think this is Arsenal's bread and butter, these kind of games. This is just what they win. They'll come a cropper against better teams and bigger teams. But similarly, 2-9 isn't the kind of price I get involved in. So the way I would look at it is, Arsenal to score the first goal is 5-on, 1-5. However, Lacazette, 13-5, Sanchez, 3-1. Those are the kind of bets I would go into in this kind of game. If Arsenal are going to score first, it's probably Lacazette the form he's on. Maybe wait and see here with the team news, you know, to establish which striker you want to back. But if you want to bet on it, I would go Lacazette if he starts, 13-5, first goal. Arsenal will win this. This is what they do. I can't really see Brighton getting anything away from the Emirates.
Yeah, Lacazette, by the way, scored in each of his opening three league appearances for Arsenal at the Emirates as well. So 13-5, Lacazette to score first in the game. Everton versus Burnley, also on Sunday. 2:15 kickoff this one. Everton 8-13 to win it. The draw 13-5 with Burnley 5-1. Enhanced odds, Wayne Rooney to score and Everton to win was 9-5. That's now 9-4. Chris Wood to score and Burnley to win was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 8-1. And Michael, Ronald Koeman appears to have quelled a bit of the pressure with the League Cup win against Sunderland, followed by the come-from-behind win against Bournemouth. But it was a bizarre starting 11 he came up with against Bournemouth. He played David Klaassen, Wayne Rooney and Gylfi Sigurdsson, and all number 10s, really, with a lack of pace. And the dynamic of the game only really changed when Umar Nias came on and he scored both goals in the game. It's still working things out, Koeman.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. I think Nias, a guy who a year ago he said had no future at Everton, didn't give him a locker as well. I remember reading that. I liked Koeman's comments after the game where he tried to take credit for the tactical changes rather than taking the actual credit for the poor and odd starting 11, which I did like him doing. It's a strange game. This is definitely one I wanted Derek to do first, because I was looking at these odds and didn't see anything that jumped out. Burnley 5-1. It's probably where I'd lean. I mean, they've unbeaten away from home and they've had three really tough trips so far. Chelsea, Spurs and Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Came away from that without a defeat. Everton, you assume are going to get better, and I assume at some point they will climb away from the bottom, but I don't think I'd be backing them at 8-13 until we're certain they know what they're doing. I've got to lean towards Burnley at 5-1 on this game.
Burnley plus one, by the way, 23-20. Are we agreed, Derek, that Everton are too short here?
Well, yeah, on their form, yeah. Having said that, they've had a lot of stick this season, but we're doing this before their Thursday night game against token opposition in the Europa League. Mm. They played 6 matches at home this season before that and won 5 of them. So I suppose, you know, that explains why they're 8-13. But Burnley, I mean, you would never even consider backing them last season away from home. We all know how bad their record was on the road. This season, it's incredible. You know, I mean, why should they be worried about going to Goodison? The only people worried about going to Goodison are Everton fans. You've got to hand it to Sean Dyche, although I can't listen to him without expecting him to cry, exterminate. he's definitely a stressful doctor, isn't he, Sean Dyche? But he's doing a great job there, Burnley. They are fantastic results for Burnley away from home. I don't think they've got anything to worry about. Everton playing on the Thursday night again, still, you know, it's not Thursday Sunday. Big clubs struggle with that, and I wouldn't put Everton under that banner. 5-1 Burnley, it makes a degree of appeal, but again, I'm going to play on the safe side again and go for Burnley at odds against with a goal start. I think that's right. You know, if Everton are to win this, you know for a fact that Everton aren't going to mull a Burnley, are they? You know, if Everton are going to win this, it's going to be by a close score. But I fancy Burnley to hang on to a point at least, so I'm backing them with a goal start.
Now to St James's Park for Newcastle versus Liverpool, 4:30 kick-off on Sunday. Newcastle 4-1, the draw 11-4 with Liverpool 7-10. Enhanced odds, Joselu to score and Newcastle to win was 6-1, now 8-1. And Philip Coutinho to score and Liverpool to win was 11-5, that's now 11-4. Good to have this fixture back, Derek, because I'll always remember that meeting back in 1996 where Stan Collymore scored the winner. One of the best Premier League games ever, that one. And this is a fixture, Derek, that regularly entertains.
Yeah, there was a couple of 4-3 games, wasn't there? One the following season also finished 4-3, amazingly. That was under the days of Keegan, whose philosophy in football was, if you score four, we'll score three. it was great to watch Newcastle in those days. And I mean, this promises to be a great game for another reason, of course, isn't it, Rafa Benitez?
Yeah.
Playing against his old club, Liverpool. And I just wondered if Jurgen Klopp hadn't, if Liverpool hadn't beaten Leicester last week, if Rafa Benitez had got a bigger cheer from the Liverpool fans than Klopp would have done. I tell you what, I've got a theory about Liverpool's defensive problems. They'd be solved at a stroke if they were allowed, when opponents get a corner kick, to offer them a penalty kick instead, because they're less likely to concede that way. 15 spot kicks Simon Mignolet has faced as a Liverpool keeper and saved 7 of them. I mean, that's incredible.
That's unbelievable, isn't it, that stat?
It is. A penalty taker standing over the ball is about 1-3, 1-4 to score, or 1-8 if he's German. But those stats suggest that when Mignolet is standing 12 yards away, the taker should be nearer the even money mark. Quite incredible. I don't understand it, because he's useless. He keeps saving pens. I don't know. This game, I'll tell you what, you'll hear many bet of the day descriptions from me on this podcast over the course of the season, but this one is different. It will win. Liverpool at 7-10 will beat Newcastle. They played in Europe, but they played on Tuesday. Plenty of time to recover for this one. I said last week, and I think twice, about opposing sides managed by Rafa Benitez, because that's how high my regard for him is. But that was before I watched Newcastle closely last week. They looked clueless. I thought they were outclassed by Brighton. And if Liverpool are on one of their going days, this could be a cakewalk, you know. I really do think that. 7-10 Liverpool is an unbelievable bet.
Do have a look at overs on the goals as well. Of the 41 fixtures between two sides to have played 40 or more times in the Premier League, Newcastle against Liverpool has seen the most goals per game on average. Average is 3.14 goals a game this fixture. And over 2.5 is 4-6. Over 3.5 is in the betting at 2-1. And it wouldn't surprise me if Philip Coutinho, having scored midweek, gets on the score sheet here as well. 13-80 is to score any time, Michael.
I kind of echo Derek's comments about Liverpool. I'm not biased at all based on my local allegiances in the northeast. But I mean, Spurs earlier are 2-5 away at home against a newly promoted team, and then Liverpool 7-10 away from home against a newly promoted team. I certainly would favour Liverpool over the two in that bet and on those prices. Mane's back from suspension finally, so they will look a lot stronger up front. Their defence, unfortunately, will still look as weak as it tends to be. So I was obviously looking towards both teams to score, which I saw was 4-6, which at least gives you the insurance that if Liverpool don't get the job done, your 4-6 will probably still come in, because they will undoubtedly score with that front line. Or you could obviously double them up, Liverpool and both teams to score. 23-10 gives you the classic Liverpool and both teams to score match bet that we should really tip up every week.
Do I really have to say this bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Dave Kellner is the cream of the crop when it comes to the Naps table, with a 17-10 winner, Brighton winning at the weekend. That puts him on £30.33 profit, so he's top of the table. The Euro boys bagged another winner as well, with Real Betis at 10-11. That lifts them above Gaff P, Andy XL, Derek and Pete Farris in the rankings. Al Ross is the only other one in profit, but he had a loser last week. Come on, everyone. Let's get some winners this week, eh? Even I was better than this.
I'm not sure about that, Derek. Are you?
No, definitely not.
Michael, given you're our guest this week, what's your nap? You've got all 10 games to choose from.
My nap's undoubtedly Chelsea, 9-5. I was tempted a bit by Stoke at home to Southampton at 19-10, but Chelsea at home, 9-5 against Man City. It's got to be.
Chelsea for Michael. Derek, I'll let you go next.
Just a quick preface for this one. Look at Swansea's away record. Gone to Southampton, drew. MK Dons in the Cup, won. Palace in the league, won. Tottenham in the league, drew. Reading in the Cup, won. They're playing West Ham on Saturday, and the 7-2. Get on.
I like Stoke. I'm going with Stoke to beat Southampton. I'll keep opposing Southampton at these short prices. So the treble this week, Chelsea at 9-5, Swansea at 100-30, Stoke at 19-10, and it pays 34.18-1.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag your odds from William Hill.
Now, I'm delighted to be joined by the chief football writer with the Sunday People. Steve Bates has joined us on the podcast. Myself and Derek McGovern still with you. I want to start just by talking about the Romelu Lukaku song. It's been a hotly debated subject, and many column inches have written about this. First, I want to talk about the song before we discuss the fallout subsequently. And the song's punchline, Steve, or the payoff, is about the size of Lukaku's manhood. Is the song perpetuating a racist stereotype, or is this a case of political correctness sanitising the sport?
Listen, I've heard worse songs in my time, particularly songs that have involved kind of disasters that various clubs have suffered. I have heard much worse songs than this, but, you know, in this day and age, obviously anything that touches upon racism or any kind of racial stereotype is obviously frowned upon. You know, the problem you've got here, I think, Dave, is that once you tell a group of football fans not to sing something, then quite clearly them, as a group, as a mob, they're probably not going to take any notice of you. I think it's particularly noticeable that the other day I went to a game at Old Trafford, which was the Burton Carabao Bayo Cup tie, and the song wasn't sung, but in the next game, which was an away game at Southampton, it was sung, and that's because there are basically two different demographics of fans that go to home and away games. So, you know, trying to tell fans not to do something is really a red rag to a bull to them. And, you know, I think they've got to find another way to do it. Look, it's I suppose you could say, you know, the Kick It Out campaign will say that it does promote racial stereotype, and it's not what we want to hear. I would say that, listen, there must be better songs that United fans who sometimes are quite witty in sort of making these songs up. I'm sure there's a better one that they can come up with than one that celebrates Romelu Lukaku's manhood.
As Steve just said there, Derek, it's like a red rag to a bull, isn't it, telling a group of football fans like this that they can't sing a song. And a new song emerged in their meeting with CSKA Moscow when Lukaku scored. Is it up to United now to stamp this out, because the player and the club have both denounced these songs?
Well, I don't think he has. Lukaku hasn't denounced it. He says it's time to move on. Jesus, if someone was singing that about me, I'd be absolutely delighted. I'd be putting it on record. I mean, it's just, where does it end, all this? There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. The Kick It Out Brigade of Furies, but it's your plea, the Whip It Out Brigade. I mean, what if he does indeed have a massive slung? Is it still racist then? I mean, negative stereotyping, it's fair enough. You can't have that. But if someone tells you you've got a massive penis, I don't see the negative in that. If someone said all Scousers are thieves, I'd take umbrage, especially if no one was looking. But Scousers all have a great sense of humour. Well, I'm happy with that stereotype. I remember a few years ago, West Ham came to Anfield and their fans sang, "We've got the Canio, you've got our stereo." Now, that's genius. The Liverpool fans loved it. Probably a few who were offended on our behalf. And that's the problem we're facing now. We're too busy apologising and kowtowing to the pretended to be offended.
Okay, let's move on to the second subject I want to discuss, and that's the MLS. Because when David Beckham went to LA Galaxy a decade ago, Steve, it was seen as something of a publicity stunt. But Atlanta United broke the MLS record, or attendance record, a fortnight ago, and we've seen a few top European players, maybe not at the absolute pinnacle of their game, go to the States earlier in their career than Beckham did. Is this now a revolution, something that was seen as a fad, taking on greater significance now?
Well, listen, I've been going to America to cover kind of summer tours by English Premier League clubs for, God, the last 10, 12 years, and I've seen a steady increase during that time in the attendances. In fact, this summer in July, I was at Barcelona versus Manchester United at the FedEx Field in Washington, and there was 80,000 there. I do remember a couple of years ago, 2014, the big stadium in Michigan there called the Big House. United played a game there against Real Madrid, 109,000. And last year, Chelsea played Real Madrid in the same stadium, 105,000. So, look, this is not something that's just happened overnight. American football fans are quite taken with the European football, really, and they want to see these big clubs. And I think, you know, when they they're also getting behind their own MLS teams as well, it's quite clear about that. So, you know, I think it's just basically it's a sign that, you know, American football, you know, the MLS is on the up, definitely. And I think these big crowds is one reason why perhaps that they're in with a real shout of landing the World Cup in 2026, because if you can fill out these big stadiums, and they are fantastic stadiums with great facilities, then, you know, quite clearly, managers now, particularly guys like Jose Mourinho and I think Pep Guardiola too, they like going to America for these pre-season tours rather than going to Asia, say, where, you know, it's very hot, it's very humid, and the facilities aren't as good. The facilities, these American sports stadiums are fantastic. And football has caught on in the MLS, definitely. I was speaking to quite a few fans out there, and the reason it's becoming more popular is parents of young children prefer their offspring to play sort of soccer, as they call it, rather than, you know, traditional American football, because there's less chance of, like, the serious injuries that you get in American football. So, you know, it's got a lot going for it, and it is definitely catching on in the US.
And we know that David Money talks as well, and there's a serious chance that the MLS could become a global attraction in the future. And I think Steve picks up on a good point about that. There's so much talk about concussion protocol in American football now, and how that interferes with a retired player's life on the back of his career. Can you see the sport continuing to grow stateside?
No, not in the slightest. I mean, you mentioned all these matches, Steve, Barcelona and Man United, but I wonder how many of the fans that went to watch them were actually American. The reason that Atlanta got a great crowd last week, it was a new stadium, and I can only assume the hot dogs were on special offer too. I mean, let's see how many they get for the next match. Yes, I agree that, you know, parents over there want their kids to play football, proper football, because, you know, less likely to get injured, and it's cheaper. You know, we don't have to pay squillions for equipment and so on. But we heard all that 25 years ago, and, well, you know, once these kids become adults, they go to basketball or baseball or anything that's more popular than football, even Donald Trump. I remember the last World Cup, the 2014 World Cup, and I did a bit of checking on it, unbelievably. I did some research.
No, Derek, that doesn't sound like you.
It doesn't, but it did, honestly. The American talk show host, the scorn they heaped on the last World Cup, and these are influential fellas, these late-night talk show hosts, they set the agenda for the nation, honestly. And here's a couple of things they said. The World Cup's underway. A lot of World Cup soccer players have been faking injuries to draw a penalty from the other team. Meanwhile, a lot of Americans have been faking following the World Cup. Here's another. Congratulations to the US soccer team for beating Ghana in the opening round of the World Cup. Yep, they did the impossible, getting Americans to watch soccer. Now, this was only 4 years ago. Are we expected to believe in 4 years there's been a rapid turnaround in the temperature of the nation? No. They're not interested in football.
I don't think, you know, Del's got his point there. I don't think, you know, soccer, as they call it, will ever kind of surpass their kind of sports like basketball, baseball, American football. But it's definitely getting a bigger slice of the market than it once did. And, you know, I went to various games, not just those big games. I went to Tottenham Roma, for instance, in New York. Okay, you could say, yeah, okay, Roma have got a big Italian following in New York because that's, you know, there's a lot of Italians in New York. But there were, I did notice when I was travelling on the, you know, public transport and going to the games at Red Bull Stadium, there are a lot of kind of Americans who just like the game. They like the atmosphere. They clearly like the excitement of the Premier League, because when English clubs go over there, they follow them. But I also do think, you know, I've been to various MLS grounds around the country, East Coast, West Coast, and that there is definitely a strong following. But again, as I say, I don't think he's ever going to usurp their homegrown sports, you know, like American football and baseball.
We care, by the way. Should we care about? I mean, this is football is the most popular sport worldwide. Billions and billions of people play it, are interested in watching it. The Americans don't. What does that tell you about the Americans?
Hello, it's me, Pete Farries, talking again, as always, about the Championship. I'm going to do something I never really do, which is nap Ipswich this week. 2-1 against a talented Bristol City side looks like phenomenal value to me. Yes, Ipswich had a bit of patchy form after a very good early start, but 2 wins in 3, home win against Bolton, home win comprehensively against Sunderland, albeit McCarthy's comments afterwards were quite interesting, do mean, I think, a great 2-1 poke. Now, Bristol City have been great away from home, barely lost, of course, lost at Birmingham, but good draws, especially at Wolves and Norwich recently, could make them an interesting 90-minute price. But I think Ipswich have got the goals, they've got the talent, and actually I think they've got a side that at 2-1 should be absolutely superb value to beat Bristol City. I'm going to go down with this Ipswich ship. I wouldn't have backed them if they weren't this big a price, but they are. So for me, Ipswich Town at 2-1, my nap of the week. That's the Championship. Let's hear from Gav on League One. My League One nap this weekend is all about a side who are dreadful away from home. They've only won one in 17 months, but at home, they've scored 13 goals in three games, and thankfully this weekend, they are playing at home. Step forward, Rotherham, 8-11 to beat Northampton. Northampton away from home, actually, not too bad at the moment. Couple of draws of late, and they have picked up under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who shored them up, and they stopped conceding as many goals. But I think the firepower at Rotherham will see them through this one. 8-11 seems okay. Kiefer Moore scoring plenty. Lee Frecklington scoring plenty. They beat Bury 3-2 at home. They beat Walsall 5-1, and they recently beat Oldham 5-1 as well. Three times already this season, Rotherham United have scored 5 goals at home. Everything they do this season revolves around their home form. But my challenge this season is to come up with a nap that is odds against every single time. So Rotherham 8-11 is okay for me, but we can do better than that. And I'm going for Rotherham to win and over 2.5 goals at 11-8. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Strange results have started cropping up in League Two. If they hadn't, I'd have been putting up my usual near-evens should land kind of weekly bet almost certainly. That would have been something like Stevenage at home to managerless Port Vale, a win at home to Morecambe, and an impressive victory at Carlisle means Stevenage have more points in the last 7 days than Port Vale have managed all season. If you're looking for the usual Acker fodder that I usually put up, then Stevenage at evens would be it. But the outsiders are pulling surprises in this division, so the profit's going to come from choosing the right big prices, and boy, is there one of those this week. I'm not saying going to pre-season favourites Mansfield isn't going to be tricky, because it is. They are unbeaten at home this season in their 5 league games. They managed to hold Luton there as well. It's decent home form. However, I've made a point and a profit on this podcast from distrusting Mansfield this season. 23-20 is too short by far for any team in this division, frankly, at the moment, against Notts County. Firstly, Mansfield are unbeaten in the league at home, but Lincoln did win there in the trophy, so Mansfield only 3 wins in 6 at home. You'd need odds against to tempt me against a mid-table side. And Notts County are not a mid-table side. Kevin Nolan's team are top for a start. They've more points away from home than Mansfield have at home. They've won 4 of their 5 in total away, and all of the last 4, including at Exeter and at Wickham. They are on a run of 9 wins in 10, 6 wins in 6, 10 games in. The visitors already 9 points better off than their hosts. Notts County at 12-5, and Notts County at this week's nap.
And that is it for this week's Punt Podcast. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Make sure you check out all the latest betting at sports.williamhill.com or via the William Hill app. And make sure you check us out on iTunes by typing in William Hill. You can get this podcast delivered weekly, or alternatively, go to audioboom.com and again type in William Hill, and you'll see the Punt page available for you to listen to every single football podcast we produce. And before I forget, the answer to that quiz question: what has Harry Kane done at the John Smith Stadium, which he's not done elsewhere? Been sent off. He was dismissed when on loan with Leyton Orient back in 2011. He was substituted on, scored, and then sent off, and that remains his only red card in all competitions. Until next week, folks, enjoy your betting here with William Hill, and have a happy weekend.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.